name is Judith Pellegrino. Welcome to Close Encounters with My Inner Child. In this episode, I will be sharing about two traumatic events in a series of three that occurred when I was 8 years old. The first trauma led my inner child to make a vow that was supposed to protect her from experiencing more shame than she was emotionally equipped to handle. Unfortunately, this vow led to the second trauma that occurred in third grade. This one was even worse than the first trauma. I will be sharing details from both of these childhood traumatic events. I will identify the vow my inner child made that was rooted in erroneous core beliefs. I will also connect the dots between those core erroneous beliefs and my traumatic adult work life and share what it took to transform that. When my inner child graduated second grade, she was invited to her best girlfriend Donna's house to eat dinner and sleep over. This girlfriend was sickly, but my inner child nor her mother knew just how sick Donna was. Shortly after my inner child arrived, her girlfriend was on the floor, her body convulsing, her eyes rolling behind her head. Foam was coming from her mouth. My inner child had no idea what was happening to her best friend. She was terrified. Suddenly, Donna's mom screamed at my inner child to call the ambulance. Little Judy had not been coached on how to call an ambulance, especially while in the middle of a traumatic experience. Back then, there was no such thing as 911. Donna's mom became frantic. My inner child wanted to help her help Donna, but she didn't know how. Donna's mom's loud, angry voice scared her even worse than she already was. Just watching her friend convulse was enough. She believed Donna was going to die and that it would be all her fault because of her stupidity. My inner child's parents unconsciously taught her that she was supposed to be born knowing everything. She was not worth busy people's time. She was told by her parents, and it was implied, that she had to figure things out for herself. It was hard enough for her to know that people who were supposed to love her the most believed she was stupid. Now, her best friend's mom, who was kind and patient with her before this experience, was yelling at her like she was stupid. I remember while she walked herself home after such an ordeal, she made three vows. Something is wrong with me, I cannot cope, and I am unlovable. These vows helped her believe it was best if she never let adults know what she didn't know again. Unbeknownst to her, this core belief and decision would set her up for almost a year's worth of anxiety that was off the charts in her third grade school year. Not telling authority figures what she did not know during the transition from addition and subtraction to multiplication and division, and an inability to comprehend what she was reading, set her up for academic failure, public humiliation in school twice, and beatings at school and at home. She would also be sentenced to summer school and had remedial reading in fourth grade in order to catch up to her classmates. When my inner child started third grade, she was still 8 years old. She had been a good student in first and second grade and thought she would do well again. At the end of summer vacation, she looked forward to meeting her new teacher. Her new teacher's name was Mrs. Blackman. She wore a square-shaped gray blonde wig. Her stern, cold face was covered with liquid and powder makeup that was caked to her face. Her perfume was so strong and distracting that if I smelled it today, I would shout out loud, "Mrs. Blackman!" Black pussycat glasses framed her beady blue eyes. Her fingers were long, pointed, and cold. My inner child was so afraid of her. When she told her mother about Mrs. Blackman's harsh characteristics, her mother misunderstood. She believed my inner child just did not like her new teacher and was criticizing her. She did not hear her daughter's unconscious cry for help. Early in my adult healing journey, I realized why my inner child was afraid of Mrs. Blackman. Some of her physical traits reminded her of her grandfather on her mother's side. His expression was stern, his eyes were blue, and he wore dark-framed glasses. His fingers were cold. Thankfully, he passed away the year before my inner child and her family of origin moved to their new home, town, and school. I say this because I learned this grandfather tickled my inner child until she could not breathe or urinated. No wonder my inner child dissociated in class and got lost academically. No wonder she felt anxious in class shortly after her trauma with her best friend Donna and her mother. That traumatic experience also led to the vow she made that something was wrong with her, and the decision she could not let adults know what she did not know ever again. Sessions with therapists as an adult over the years helped me to see another contributing factor to my inner child's worst academic school year. She was discouraged by her mother in her younger years. Her mom taught her it was dangerous to ask for help from busy authority figures. Why would she believe she deserved help or would get it? How could a highly sensitive child who lacked the required cognitive thinking skills be able to ask for help from scary, untrustworthy adults, especially after experiencing a major life trauma? As a result, she got poor test grades marked in red. On her homework, the red letters spelled I-N-C, ink. My inner child was afraid to show her parents these bad marks. Her brother gave her the idea to forge her mother's signature on her papers. My inner child did not know how to ask busy authority figures for help without getting hurt physically or emotionally. She had no idea how to do the right and good thing without getting into trouble. Her mother would tell her how lazy she was, so she gave up asking for help. On Monday mornings before school started, my inner child would walk back and forth to and from school. She would stand outside in the bitter cold temperatures on a frozen puddle in front of a noisy cement factory that was between her home and school. Her anxiety levels were so bad, she felt sick to her stomach and her heart pounded out of her chest. Her mouth was dry and her head hurt. She finally decided to go home and ask her mom if she could stay home from school. Surprisingly, her busy mom let her stay home. My inner child did realize that staying home from school saved her physical and emotional skin for the time being. She did not realize how she was prolonging the agony and how her academic dilemma grew worse. On the day she went through school with anxiety, she would use her milk money to buy a better lunch than her mom packed her. When she did not have money, she stole snacks from the corner store to comfort herself after school. She somehow thought that asking her mother to pack her half a cheese and mustard sandwich, an orange, and a container of milk for lunch each day, which she didn't even like, would somehow give her mom a clue that something was wrong and she needed her help. For goodness sake, she was a bologna and cheese sandwich girl. Instead of throwing the icky lunches away, she stuffed them in a cedar closet at home. One night, her mom smelled something strange. As she rooted through the cedar closet, she discovered the stench came from her rotting lunches. They were all still in the brown paper bags with her name written on them. Her mom was so mad at her that she totally missed my inner child's cry for help. Not too much longer after that experience, Mrs. Blackman was walking down the aisle where my inner child sat in the classroom. She noticed paper sticking out of my inner child's desk. Mrs. Blackman started pulling every book and piece of paper out of her desk. All the children in the class were staring. She gathered all the horrible tests and incomplete homeworks together. Mrs. Blackman said she would be calling her mother that evening. My inner child begged her to let her take the stack of papers home to get them signed. She promised Mrs. Blackman she would get her mother to sign them all. She actually meant it in the moment. When my inner child arrived home, her oldest brother, who was also struggling in school, was being chased around the dining room table by her mother with her father's belt. My inner child realized if her brother was being beat for just one bad test grade, what would her mother do to her for an entire stack? She did not want to find out. She thought she would approach her mom later that evening when things cooled off. Then she thought she would tell her before she went to school. Neither plan unfolded. She went through the day wondering when Mrs. Blackman would ask her for the unsigned papers. Well, the moment she thought she had lived to see another day, Mrs. Blackman asked her for the signed packet of papers just before the end of the school day. Silence fell on the class. The energy in my inner child's root chakra dropped to the floor. Her mouth got dry. Her head pounded in time with her heart. Mrs. Blackman called her up to the front of the classroom. She took my inner child's little hand and whacked it hard with a yardstick a number of times. That was bad enough. It was when my inner child heard Mrs. Blackman label her a liar while whacking her. this is the part of the experience that left such a scar on my inner child's soul, that this childhood academic trauma that occurred in 1973 into 1974 has been repeating in my adult life in varying degrees for years, starting in 2003 into 2004, 30 years later. This traumatic pattern that shows up in my adult work life goes like this. I receive a promotion I cannot handle. I hide the fact I cannot handle it. The authority figures who were supposed to be helping me are unavailable. I am left to do their job. I do their job. I get in trouble. I am scapegoated, humiliated, and fired. I am devastated. I punish myself so harshly, it takes quite a while for me to get back on my feet and be able to earn a living again. Each traumatic work experience between 2004 and 2017 was pretty awful in their own right. The one in 2017 was so stressful that the cortisol levels were so high, I lost my short-term memory for an entire year. I started going to two therapists at that time. Pat Obst from Starting Point in Westmont, New Jersey said, "You are bleeding emotionally and we have to stop the bleeding." She had me write letters to anyone who harmed me from childhood to the age of 22. I wrote a letter to 25 people. I told each one of them what they did or did not do to me, how that hurt me as a child and later as an adult. I told them what I needed them to do instead. I had to find a picture of each person. I had to read the letter to the picture of each person. I had to read each of these letters to Pat, my therapist. I had to shred the letters when I was finished. I know this process stopped the bleeding. I also learned to value and respect myself. I think this was one of the ways I parented myself. I was advocating for my inner child with these people who hurt my inner child through the letters that I wrote to them. Even though it helped me recreate the trauma to a lesser degree, something still needed to change within me. My memory came back. I started back to work as a temp. Before I left for the weekend, my current manager playfully asked if she said or did anything to offend me. I asked her if she really wanted to know, because sometimes people ask, but they really don't want to hear it. She said yes. I told her, she kind of barked at me a couple times. I told her I was sensitive. She sat back in her chair, rolled her big eyes, and said, "Oh God, I need someone with thicker skin." She also said she could be hard on her girls. Over the weekend, I soul-searched and realized that my manager's managerial style and my temperament were not a match. Sunday night, I emailed the temp agency and gave the position back. Unfortunately, I had to go back into that manager's office to pick up a folder I left there, thinking it had personal information in it. When I arrived, my manager insisted that I come into her office. She asked what happened between Friday and Monday. Confidently, I told her that I learned her managerial style and my temperament were not a match. She said I misunderstood her. I gave her the benefit of the doubt and stayed on. We were both respectful, conscientious, and professional to each other. When I was hired by this company, we were still both happy. On my first anniversary, I was given a purple balloon, which I loved, and a dollar an hour increase, which I also loved. I was told I did a fabulous job and I earned every penny. For some reason, after I received the raise in February, my manager made an unprofessional remark to me and became unavailable. When COVID-19 forced our office to close, the unprofessional remarks increased. We did not interact often by phone or text. I was glad because it was usually awful. I thought she may have been resentful that she was the one doing all the work and I was not doing as much as her. That made sense to me. I had to be coached by my therapists and my husband, who is a retired manager, to help me understand that none of what was happening was my fault, that my manager chose to do everything. It was her job to provide me enough work. She could have given me access to QuickBooks remotely, but she did not. The things she said and did were unprofessional, no matter what was going on in the outside world. The worst thing I heard her say was, "It's a hard pill to swallow, paying you your full salary when you only worked 5 hours every week." This was unnecessary because I applied for unemployment and was approved, which they knew. The company insisted on paying me because they were getting a grant if they continued to pay all their employees their full salary. Just when I thought I endured the worst, my manager tried to manipulate me with guilt. She implied I owed the company and piled 10 more hours of work on me a week and told me they would not be able to pay me for hours worked past 24. She said this on 3 separate occasions. I could not respond to her in the moment because I was so shocked. One of the tools I discovered and started using regularly during COVID-19 is the Wu Wei videos on YouTube. David and Alexandra Lees encouraged me to embrace my inner child, to discover her core beliefs and why she believes that. They encouraged me to discover the vow my inner child made when she was around the ages of 6 and 9 years old. They helped me to understand my wounded inner child needs me to parent these parts of her consistently with firm sensitivity. I need to find her in the kernel she is imprisoned herself in. I need to set her free by providing the emotional education she did not receive while growing up. I need to update her erroneous, outdated, childish belief system. David and Alexandra Lees also cautioned me about affirming what I want without having a relationship with my inner child. I can confirm that in 2004, I did not have a relationship with my inner child and was affirming an abundant, wonderful life. Now I know exactly why all hell broke loose instead of getting the wonderful life I affirmed. I learned I had put the horse before the cart. I had to earn my inner child's trust and align and unify with the subconscious and conscious mind. While walking my pooch on one warm, muggy afternoon, I spoke with my inner child about her mother and Mrs. Blackman. I told her, if your mother was not so busy and or was actually approachable, you would never have had to make the choices you did in third grade. If your mother noticed something was wrong or was interested in your academic success, she would have asked to see your homework. She would have called the teacher herself to see how you were doing. If your mother were trustworthy and safe and had reasonable expectations of you and treated you in age-appropriate ways instead of like an adult and helped you with your homework, you would not have had to resort to lying. If Mrs. Blackman treated you age-appropriately and called your mother instead of relying on you to show your mother the stack of papers, she would not have had to resort to humiliating you in front of your peers. I acknowledged that my inner child lied, cheated, stole, and forged her mom's signatures to protect herself from adults who did not know what was going on inside of her, adults who believed the worst about her and punished her instead of helping her. This part of me that was punished severely is incredibly hard on me. My therapist has been helping me to teach my inner child that everything that happened to her as a child was not all her fault. She was punished severely for something that may have been caused by the first traumatic experience she had with Donna and her mother. What I learned recently is that trauma, abuse, and neglect can actually have a detrimental effect on one's ability to learn. Unfortunately, it became a habit to blame myself for everything and making excuses for authority figures, even if they played a part in the problem. In the words of David and Alexandra Lees from the Wu Wei YouTube videos I watch and talk about, I have to update my erroneous belief system. I have to take responsibility for my basic human needs. I have to stop believing the very worst about myself. I have to stop punishing myself severely. I have to stop making excuses for authority figures. In my current job, I did just that. One day, when my hours were closing in on 24, and I had 12 more hours worth of work for the week, I asked my manager how she wanted to handle this. She texted me, "I want you to do your job. Thank you." I tried to reach out to my job coach that was appointed by the state of New Jersey due to my disabilities to help me navigate this situation. He was unavailable at the time. I spoke to my best female friend, Holly, to wish her a happy birthday on my way to work. I did not talk to her about my work dilemma. Taking the focus off this issue helped ground me enough for what I was about to do. Every morning, I call my manager, who works off-site. I had the courage to ask her about my hours again. When she went into the familiar song implying I owed them for hours I was paid but did not work, out of my mouth came, "That sounds unethical." There was silence on the other end of the phone. Then I heard my manager say, I will pay you for all the hours you work beyond 24 this week, but I will not pay you over 24 going forward. I went the extra mile and asked for this agreement in writing. With a maternal voice, she told me how offended and disappointed she was in me for asking, but she did provide an email confirming our agreement. For the first time in my work life, I did not care what she or anyone else thought of me. I cared more about what I thought of myself. I did not internalize what she said as truth the way I did in 2004 when the president, who was like a father figure to me, called me a detriment on the way out of his office. It felt good to stand up for myself. I have had a very professional relationship with my current manager ever since. She actually decreased the workload. All I want is respect. I am not looking for a mother anymore. My manager is a good teacher. I am a good student. There is respect between us. I respect myself, which I learned is crucial for getting respect from others. I am grateful I have updated my 8-year-old's erroneous belief system, can act on her behalf in my adult work life in peace. Thank you for listening.